When your space has the long-lasting, noticeable scent of Airwick Vibrant Scented Oils, you'll want to invite everyone over, from book club to the fantasy league, even the in-laws.
It smells amazing.
Airwick Vibrant Scented Oils are infused with 2 times more natural essential oils versus regular Airwick scented oils for our most authentic, nature-inspired fragrance experience. Transform your space with scents like white sage and mahogany or lavender and water lily. Now that's a breath of fresh air, Wick.
The South Dakota Stories, Volume 7. My trip to South Dakota was the best summer ever. Now I don't need to go to Mars because I've been to the Badlands. And I caught a bigger walleye than Dad when we went to the Missouri River. Then I rode my bike through these huge rocks called Needles. Ooh, I also saw my first herd of bison, even a fuzzy furry baby one. I can't wait to go back and see more. There's so much South Dakota, so little time.
Early Duncan had it. They turned it over. Alley-oop back to Kevin. Oh, baby! Woo! KD! You can see it coming, and the building is electric off that slam dunk.
Catastrophic.
Welcome back to the A Wolf Among Wolves podcast. I am your host, Brendan Hedke, and as always, the podcast is a part of the A Wolf Among Wolves podcast network on awolfamongwolves.com. And today I am joined by Richard from Mavs Draft. You can find him on Twitter at Mavs Draft. And he's joining today to talk about Minnesota Timberwolves versus the Dallas Mavericks preseason game number 3 on Thursday, December 17th. How's it going, Richard?
It's going pretty good. It's we're near the end of the preseason, which is always a good thing. So I'm ready for the overreactions to nothing to be done.
Oh my, yeah. Talk about overreactions. You should. The Timberwolves have played really bad first 2 games. Overreactions have been flowing. I've had a few overreactions, but I try and keep them limited myself. But Wolves Twitter is a very pessimistic place all of a sudden, and I get it. We went through a lot, but I don't think you can take too much stock. And how much stock do you actually put into what you're seeing during preseason? And, like, what do you think you can take out of preseason? What do you think just should be disregarded?
Yeah, I mean, you can take, like, 10% of things. I feel like for some of the young fringe guys, seeing if they got game, I think that's important. Like, I'm trying to think of who – like, if Jared Vanderbilt, for example, like, if he starts, like, being able to – dominate for stretches, like, that's important. Like, right. That means he probably is deserving of some minutes. Doesn't mean he's gonna be dominant in the regular season though, but like things like that, I feel like that's as much as you can take. I don't feel like Luka Doncic playing terribly is like something you're gonna be like, oh, I'm rethinking MVP now, like, you know.
Yeah, no, and I get that, because like Kat hasn't looked great in the first 2 preseason games, and Kat's dealt with a lot outside of basketball stuff in general, but like he shot like 3 for 12 the other night. Like, I'm not worried about Karl Anthony Towns' skill being there. I am a little worried about him as just a person and like getting through all the tragedy he's been through. But like, I know as a basketball player, he has the skill, and the skill didn't just vanish over the offseason. But for me, as I watch preseason games, one, I like to see just how some people work together, even if results aren't that great. Just like what kind of sets are being ran out there when certain people are sharing the floor. And then looking at young guys to see if they belong. But, like, you see some young players. Anthony Edwards hasn't looked great in his first 2 preseason games either. And I've had people texting me saying we should have drafted Melo. And just people just all over the place. And I get it. And I actually did want Melo more than Edwards coming in the draft anyways. But I'm not mad about Edwards not looking good, because LaMelo just had a game where he didn't score. But people see the flashy passes and they think he's all great, and then they see Edwards not playing well, and they think Edwards is going to be a bust. I mean, Anthony Edwards got drafted, like, less than a month ago, and he's already trying to play against NBA-level competition. So I think it's a little too hard to kind of judge, really, a lot of these young players, especially this year, because most seasons they would have much longer training camp, not to mention summer league, and they would also have, you know what, like 8 games of preseason basketball, and now they have 3. So I don't take too much stock into it.
Yeah, and I mean, dude, the summer league is probably the biggest thing, especially because, like I said, the young guys is what I think you take the most of from preseason. I mean, yeah, a month turnaround, these guys are going to be rusty. I mean, think about it. They haven't played organized ball outside of, like, some low-key pickup games. It's you really can't draw a conclusion from this. This is such a weird draft class anyways. Like, there's so many different things that you could point to. The preseason is not the end all be all for most of these guys. You know, like, it's cool to, there are some guys who it's obvious, like, they're going to be fine. Like, I mean, Memphis just played Minnesota. I think you can tell pretty quickly. And obviously, like, I think both of us are pretty big on this guy, like Desmond Bane.
Yeah.
Like, that guy's going to be good.
Yep.
That you didn't need the preseason to know that. Like, I don't know. There's some things like that, but I mean, man, you cannot be taking number one pick talk seriously after a preseason game.
No, exactly. I get the concern because, you know, there was times where he just didn't look good out there. But, I mean, the kid's just turned 19 years old, and he has all the athleticism in the world. And he's going to be a fine NBA player regardless, I think. But people are just taking too much stock. And I actually just finished writing a piece on Jarrett Culver's performance in the first two games because he's been really encouraging as a defender. And then he's shown some offense that we haven't seen really from him a lot, and it's been kind of encouraging, and I just tried to make sense of it. But in the piece, I was talking about, like, what can you actually take from these preseason games and what can't you? And I basically said, like, I'm not taking the shooting percentage for this game. Yep. I'm not taking any of that type of stat stuff. What I'm taking in is looking at the video, how comfortable does he look in the court compared to last year? Is he doing things defensively that he didn't do last year? And then are those things going to translate to the NBA? Because Jarrett Culver was, like, checking Ja Morant. They had him playing point-of-attack defense on Ja. Yeah. And there was just a number of plays where Ja started driving and Culver was able to make ground back up and cut him off. And it was just really encouraging stuff that we didn't really see from him as a defender last year. So I took that, and that's kind of what I focused on, more than, oh, he shot 2 for 5 throughout the preseason from three. He's right. A 40% shooter. Like, no, he's probably not going to shoot 40%. Actually, I almost can guarantee he's not going to shoot 40% from three. I hope he does. I hope he proves me wrong there, but I highly, highly doubt it. So those are the type of things that I take from preseason games. Have you been able to watch any Timberwolves games or anything? Or have you just, I mean, just these two preseason games?
So, funny enough, I actually have watched more. I watched the Memphis games twice. I watched those more than I did the Dallas game. Not entirely by design. There's some stuff going on with Dallas. I don't know if you heard about it with Fox Sports Southwest.
It's here too.
Maps.
It is everywhere. Like, Sinclair's just so bad. So, like, a lot of Wolves fans, unless you have, like, DirecTV or, yep, like, Charter Spectrum, you can't watch the Wolves unless you find it online somewhere. So it's pretty tough for a lot of Wolves fans, a lot of people. Luckily, I'm able to watch them through my college roommate's provider that I had in college. I still have the login and stuff, and I talked to him. He said I can still use it. So, like, other than that, though, a lot of people are having trouble with it. So Wolves Nation, your Mavs Nation, everybody kind of is in the same boat, I think.
Yep. Yeah, it sucks. So I didn't watch the first game. I watched bits and pieces of the second. I watched almost all of the first one, and I watched just casually the second game. So, like I said, I've seen probably more Wolves in Memphis than I have Dallas.
Oh yeah. So, did anything stand out to you as, like, I know you're not just outsider watching just for bad. I'm sure you're, like, thinking about stuff while you're watching games. Just, like, I can watch whatever game, and I'm always trying to, like, break things down. Did anything pop off the page, either good or bad, about what you saw from the Wolves during those games that you watched?
So, I mean, I watched more for Memphis, if I'm being 100% honest.
And that's totally fair, yeah.
And obviously, I was the Desmond Bane guy. So,
right.
Like, but, I mean, Kat, you know, you talked about it earlier. Like, Kat doesn't look like he's going to drop off. Like, he's probably still going to flirt with 30 and 10. I noticed Culver did look a lot smoother. That was pretty noticeable, even just casually paying attention to it. And I really watched for Anthony Edwards. I really didn't see anything that, like, scared me. Those were my key takeaways, though. Like, I mainly watched for the young guys and Kat.
Yeah, and the other thing with Kat, too, like I said before, like, Kat I don't know. He didn't shoot well from three for a while, and just, like, I'm not worried about that type of stuff. With Culver, though, another thing I looked at, I forgot to mention when I talked about the piece earlier, his stroke looks better, less of a hitch and everything, so I think that really helps him. Maybe not bodes well for him being a good shooter, but, like, he shot 29.9% from three last year. Maybe he's going to be 33 or 34% this year, which is, like, much more respectable numbers.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah. That... I'm sorry.
And I think the confidence thing was something that got to him, not just from three, but from, like, making the right decisions, shooting free throws, too. He shot, like, 40-something percent from free throw line last year, which I think was a lot more mental than it was, like, physical. So if he's a little more confident, maybe he's up to 70% or something this year, which would make him a lot more playable, because there was times he wasn't very playable last year. But those are just some encouraging things I saw with him. To kind of focus back on Anthony Edwards, because you mentioned that you didn't see anything that scared you from him. I didn't necessarily see anything that scared me from him either, and it seems like a lot of Wolves fans made it seem like you should be scared because he's not good or something, especially in the first game. He looked a lot better in the second game, but the first game, he did a lot of standing around. But my argument to that is he's just a rookie. Like, he looked like a rookie out there. He looked like you could see him processing everything. All the plays, everything was being processed by him, which is what you want. Don't you want him thinking about what he's supposed to be doing on the court rather than just going balls to the walls and just doing whatever he wants out there? I think he's a lot smarter than people let on, and I think he was just processing because it was his first time on an NBA court against, you know, Ja Morant. Like, it's going to be tough.
Yeah, it's not easy, and I mean, like I said, I watched a lot for Desmond Bane, and my favorite thing about him at TCU was just how much he moved to get to his spots. And even then, I was like, dude, why are you not moving? It's right. A rookie thing. It's a chemistry thing. It's very obvious these rookies don't have chemistry, and that's a big part of why the short gap hurts a lot of them, I think. It's so noticeable that they miss him wide open in the corners, things like that. I really don't think you can take too much stock into seeing Anthony Edwards, like, not moving a lot off ball. Especially because, like, he didn't blow me away, obviously, but, like, I feel like that's not an issue. Like, I'd be like a cool thumbs up if he blew me away.
Right.
That would be my reaction. But, like, if he showed, like, major flags, that's way more concerning to me. That's something that, like, pops out more.
You know? Right. Yeah. And I think one of my rules of thumb is just, like, looking at people in preseason, especially, you know, first and second year guys, is, like, I think you can take more stock in if they look good than you can and if they look bad. Like, if he came out and he just dropped, like, 25, I'd be like, all right, this kid is going to be good in the NBA. But he goes out and scores 5, and I'm not like, okay, this kid's going to suck in the NBA. Like, yeah, he's probably not going to be a 25-point-per-game scorer if he scores 25 in the preseason. But it kind of just shows you that, like, he belongs there. But, like, a 5-point outing isn't showing me that he doesn't belong in the league. So that's kind of my big takeaway from that. I want to switch over to talk about the Mavs a little bit. So obviously the Dallas Mavericks have a couple really nice young rookies that I really like coming out of the draft, and I was kind of excited to see that they landed in Dallas. Tyrell Terry being one, Tyler Bay being one, Josh Green. Have those guys played? I haven't watched any of the Mavs. Have those guys played, and if they have, how have they looked?
Yeah, so Tyrell Terry hasn't really done much. He's been kind of – him and Tyler Bay really just haven't seen the court much. But Josh Green has come in. I want to say it was the second game where he played with almost all the starters. So I think he came in for Josh Richardson. So it was like with him, Luka, Powell, and Finney Smith, and I'm blanking on who the other one is, and I'm hating myself for it. But
Tim Hardaway?
Yes, Tim Hardaway, thank you. And he looked really good. I mean, the defense is 100% there because he was a try-hard on defense.
Right.
Not only the whole year at Arizona, but he was a try-hard that night. Like, he was just going balls to the wall kind of thing. Like, he was just all out on preseason basketball. And his floater looked nice. He gets to his spots. It looks like he's benefiting from NBA spacing. Just the way that he is and, like, his IQ, it's really going to work. You know, he's not going to be going against – 5 other people, including two teammates, like he did in Arizona at the rim. So I'm really confident. He was my guy for Dallas. He was my top choice all along. And, like, I really think that they have a chance to hit a home run with him. And I think he gets some immediate minutes in the rotation. I have no clue. Like, I do not envy Carlisle right now to have to draw up a rotation, though, because it's insane. The Wings went from Dorian Finney-Smith to be the only playable one to now having, like, five guys all in that mix.
Yeah, no, I think the Mavericks are, like, really in an interesting spot because I can see, like, 12 names on this list where I'm like, yeah, that guy probably could deserve, like, NBA rotational minutes. And the Wolves are kind of in the same way, but not quite to the same extent as the Mavericks. We have a lot of guys who aren't so good, but they're all about the same level, and we just need some of them to play minutes, but we have to figure out which ones they're going to be. But the thing I liked about Josh Green for the pick for the Mavericks is I thought he would be a good shooter, and I thought he'd be a good defender. And you saying that you can just see the defense being there, like, that's something I think you should be able to, as a Mavs fan, buy stock in out of, like, based off these preseason games. And you also mentioned that he's getting to his spots. I think that's something that Mavs fans can be really happy about, is just that he gets to that spot. Maybe he's not knocking the shot down yet, but he knows how to effectively get there and get to that shot, which is something that a lot of rookies don't know how to do. And I think with Anthony Edwards, he's still figuring out how does he play when he's on the court with D'Angelo Russell and Karl-Anthony Towns, two high-profile scorers, not to mention if he shares the court with Malik Beasley. That's three guys that probably average at least like 16 points a game.
Yep.
So where does he get a shot? So someone like Josh Green coming into the league, playing next to Luka Doncic, one of the most prolific scorers in the NBA, if he's already finding the correct places to get a shot, like, that's something Mavericks fans should really be encouraged by. And if he was playing bad, I don't think to be discouraged by that. But if he's already playing that good, then I think you got a good one there.
Right, right. And I hope it translates to the regular season, too.
Yeah, and it probably will, you know, at least, like I said, getting to where he wants to be. But I don't think it's like a foregone conclusion that he's going to be great or anything. But it's just like all of that stuff really bodes well for him being a solid player at some point in his career. Might not be right away, but at some point he should be solid. But other than that, is there any other rookies that you're like, or any like matchups you're excited to see tomorrow? I guess most people listening probably listen to this the same day as the game, but for us, it'll be tomorrow night. What are you like looking for? Is there any matchups that you're excited to see?
Honestly, I mean, one of them, James Johnson coming home. No, I'm just kidding. But,
I'm really happy with the Wolves making. Obviously, we sent James Johnson to the Thunder before whatever. I don't even know how he ended up in Dallas. But I'm happy with the Rubio trade, but I'm going to miss James Johnson for sure. You guys, he's a heck of a locker room guy, and he's just a cool dude. Just wait for, like, the best pregame outfits you've ever seen in your entire life. Like, just the best. And he's just super cool from what I've heard, people that have been around him. But, yeah, what were you saying? What are you looking forward to?
Yeah, so against Milwaukee, anytime they put Dwight Powell in the post, it was game over for Dallas. So I'm really interested to see how they guard Cat, because years past, I know they put Dorian Finney-Smith on him until he got like 5 to 10 feet away, and it worked. I don't know what they're going to do without Porzingis. So, and they're not going to start Maxi Kleber, who on paper fits perfectly against him.
Right.
So I'm really interested to see how they handle Cat, and that goes for the rest of the regular season too, because they've never had an answer for that guy.
Yeah, and most teams don't. To be fair, most teams don't. But it, but like Dwight Powell's not a big dude, from my understanding. Like, he's not a good defender either. See,
no.
And then on the offensive side of ball, Dwight Powell's solid. But like, I'm interested to see how Cat does against someone like that, because we saw him go up against Jonas Valanciunas, and like Valanciunas is just a big dude. Like, he's one of the biggest dudes in the league, so he was just able to just overpower Cat. And I actually think Cat was pretty solid defensively for the most part. He was in the right spots. My thing was with Cat is just if he has to make a decision between two people, it usually doesn't work out well, because he just has to process that, and he's not the quickest to react. But if he just has to worry about one guy, he's usually pretty solid. But I'm just interested to see how his defense looks against somebody like Dwight Powell, who's a little bit quicker, but a little bit, you know, smaller, not as big and strong as Jonas Valanciunas. But one matchup I'm really interested to see is who guards Luka Doncic for the Timberwolves. I'm guessing it'll be they'll put Okogie on him. And if he's out there when Culver's out there, I want to see Jarrett Culver on him just to see how Culver looks against somebody that's... Because, like, Luka Doncic is one of the best scorers in the league, and he's a totally different style player than Ja Morant, who Culver guarded some against Memphis. Luka's not, like, top-end speed like Morant, but he's one of the craftiest players in the league, so I want to see... And he's bigger than Morant. He has more size. He's stronger, I would say. So I just want to see how people like Culver would match up against someone like Luka. And then also, like, I want to see, like, Josh Richardson try and guard up on, like, Anthony Edwards and see if Edwards is able to do anything against him, because Richardson's a really solid defender, from my understanding. I especially remember him playing for Miami and just being solid defensively. And just seeing if Edwards can do something against that. But it'll be there'll be interesting matchups all over the floor there, I think.
Yeah, and I think Josh Richardson has been phenomenal on defense. Mavs fans already are enamored with him. They're already calling for an extension.
And that's something the Mavericks have needed, like, for a long time, is like some defense around Luka. So, like, that's a good pickup for them to have. So Luka doesn't have to guard, not that, like, I mean, D'Angelo Russell's not playing because he's out, but if Luka had to guard like D'Angelo Russell, it'd be the same thing as D'Angelo Russell probably trying to guard Luka. I mean, not quite as bad, because I think Luka's a little bit better defensively than D'Angelo Russell and better offensively, but it's same caliber, like pretty much just getting whatever they want on the court.
Yeah, and I mean, Luka played well in the bubble on defense, especially in the playoffs. Like, he gave it his all, but I mean, let's be real, in the regular season, he's not going to be more than like a neutral defender. Like, that's a good outcome.
And
like,
my thing with Luka is, even if he's not a solid defender, I don't think he's ever going to be like a total liability. Like, kind of how Trae Young is just like too small to really make a difference. Like, Luka's big enough to make a difference regardless if he's like a good defender. He's still going to be in your way. Whereas, like, someone like Trae Young's not like that. So Luka's always going to be not the worst defender in the league if he gives any effort, because he just has some size to him to kind of combat things.
And he moves well. Like, it's a big myth is that he's just stiff on defense, but he's not.
No, I don't see how you can be like super stiff on defense and be that fluid on offense. It just doesn't like make sense. Like, his body's not changing between an offensive possession to a defensive possession. I do want to see, going back to what you said, I want to see what the Mavericks' answer for Towns is. Because realistically, you would think it would be Maxi, but they're not going to start him. And I don't know how much Cat's going to play. I don't know if he's going to play like a full game-wise, or if they're going to limit him and play him only like 12 minutes a night. I don't know what their plan is, because usually, like we said earlier, there's 8 preseason games, and this year there's 3. But I'm interested to see that matchup for sure. Is there anything you haven't seen yet that you are hoping to see from the Mavericks in general?
Honestly, my real answer would be Porzingis, but that's a cheat answer. I would like to just kind of see how, I don't really know how to word this. I guess just the ball handler versatility, kind of just almost running a lineup with James Johnson, like at the five, where almost every single person can handle the ball at some point, where you have like Luka, Brunson, Richardson, and even Josh Green. You could even, I want to see how daring they can get to go with their extreme five small ball with 5 ball handlers. And that's a loose term with ball handler, but people who can be trusted with the ball in their hands, you know?
If you want to talk about ball handlers, with the Timberwolves having, not having D'Angelo Russell for the game, that leaves one point guard on a full NBA contract, and that's Ricky Rubio. So I'm sure Rubio will get the start, which will be interesting to see him get even more minutes with Karl-Anthony Towns. But I'm interested to see what happens beyond that. Who is the Timberwolves' next point guard? Because on the roster right now, we have Ashton Haggins out of Kentucky. who is he was a good defender in college, but his offensive game was pretty non-existent. And then there's Jalen Nowell, who is a combo guard, a scoring guard. He's not a facilitator. And then other than that, you have your other guards are Okogie, who I would not trust handling the ball. Culver, who played some, he was a primary ball handler for a lot of times at Texas Tech. And then you have like Malik Beasley, who I also don't trust to handle the ball all game. And a lot of Timberwolves fans were hoping for Jordan McLaughlin to be re-signed, and he just has not been re-signed yet. So I'm just interested to see what the rotation looks like for the guards. Do they run Culver there and see if he's got it? They did that at times last year. Didn't look great, but he seems to have tightened up his handle. His decision-making looks better, and he just looks more comfortable out there. But I don't know what the answer is there. Do you know much about Ashton Haggins? Because I didn't study his game at all, but I know you're even deeper into the draft every year than I am. So what do you know about Haggins, and how would you feel if he was the backup point guard for the Wolves for a game?
Probably not too confident. On defense, he's a little bit overrated. You know, he's pesky, loves going for turnovers, but that's about as much as he does on defense. He's not like a point of action defender.
Right.
You know, like he's not going to guard you all the way to the drive on the drive. Offensively, the shot, I have no confidence in. Really good slasher and facilitator, but why is Jordan McLaughlin not signing? I loved him out of USC. I was all in on that guy, and I'm like, how is this guy not getting attention? And I was too scared to rank him above like 70. But he was good too last year. Like, what are we missing?
Yeah, so the thing with McLaughlin, he's in a really tough position because he is he had a restricted free agent contract this offseason, and out of a two-way deal, it's really tough for those kind of guys to find a job in the league because, you know, the team has so much control over the situation because they can match any offer. And a lot of teams probably just didn't feel like it was worth making him an offer. So I think they're kind of at a standstill where I think the Wolves would like to have him on back in a two-way just because even with the two-way rules this year, because I don't think they're limited to 45. Maybe they're limited
but it's like
practices
flexible.
Practices don't count and stuff like that. And that was the thing last year. He never practiced with the team because he used all of his days were going to games. And Wolves fans were worried because he was our only other point guard on the roster towards the end of the season, and his 45 days were almost up. So before COVID took down the league, we thought McLaughlin might see his contract converted to a full NBA contract before the year was over.
Right.
But that never happened because COVID happened. And now I don't know if the Wolves are aren't offering enough, if J-Mac's wanting too much, if they can't find a deal for how many years he's going to be under contract. The belief has been that he's going to be back, but every day we get further down the line, the less of a likelihood is. And then we have Rondae Hollis-Jefferson came in on a camp contract, and he just balled out in the second preseason game. His defensive versatility and toughness is something the Wolves have been missing. And he might have just solidified himself as the 15th contract on the team, which then leaves the Wolves to either not bring back McLaughlin or to cut someone like Naz Reid, Jared Vanderbilt, or Jalen Nowell, which I just don't see happening. I could see them
maybe...
And I think
that's a mistake.
I think they could maybe trade someone away or something somehow to free up a roster spot, or maybe Ed Davis. He's apparently one of the best like locker room teammates of all time, but he hasn't looked great. And I don't know, maybe you could find a trade for him, or you just cut your losses with him. But he's an interest. You haven't seen enough of him to make that decision either. So I don't know. But the Jordan McLaughlin situation, super sticky. He was one of my favorite guys last year. I interviewed him back when I was writing at a different website. He's just super cool guy. And everybody seems to love him. And he actually played really well last year. He had to start for a while because of injuries. And then after the trade deadline, the Timberwolves obviously traded away Jeff Teague before the deadline and then Shabazz Napier at the deadline. And we were left with Russell and McLaughlin. And that was all the team had. And McLaughlin played really well. He's gives his all when he's out there. And I know almost every Wolves fan wants him back. We'll just have to see if he comes back.
Yeah, and I mean, point guard seems to be a pretty big hole. Like, even with all the guards, like you said, it's just, it's hard not having a full-time distributor too. Like, I don't,
right?
I don't know. It's hard. Like, at some point, it's overrated to have like so many, but it's also like you do need someone to like handle it. Especially, I mean, I've watched a lot of Phoenix. They were a prime example too.
Yep.
For the years, I mean, I couldn't even tell you who their point guards were, but it was like Tyler Ulis was their backup. Just all these guys that just should not be backup NBA point right. guards, and it can derail a lot of your progress everywhere else. Like,
well, and especially so in a season like this where you could have guys being injured because the offseason's been so weird and training camp was so short, or COVID issues pop up and all of a sudden
yep.
D'Angelo Russell has COVID and now Ricky Rubio has to be your starting point guard, then who is your backup point guard? Do you run with Noel and Culver and just let them split it? And the thing with the Timberwolves too is Ryan Saunders, the head coach, loves running two guard lineups. Like, D'Lo and Ricky Rubio are going to share the floor together for probably 8 to 12 minutes a night. What happens when you need a third point guard? Because you're going to need one at some point. And yep. who is that going to be? And maybe it is Noel. He looked really good in the first preseason game. And maybe they trust him and Culver enough, and then they'll just run the offense through, you know, Karl Anthony Towns. Maybe Anthony Edwards can run some, because he handled the ball a lot for Georgia too. But that's something that needs to be addressed for the Timberwolves.
Yeah, and I mean, I wouldn't trust Edwards with it, but I'm glad you brought up Noel, because I really liked him. He was someone who stood out. Like, he got to the basket at ease, and I liked him at Washington. Thought he was kind of the boomer bust, not like in a high ceiling, high right. risk, but like, he's either going to be a bench player who sticks around for a little bit, or he's out of the league by his second year.
Yeah.
You know, and I think he's closer to the former. I really do like his slashing ability, and if he can be a reliable shooter, like, I don't see why he can't stay on the team and stay around. Because like you said, a lot of those young guys, they have talent. It's just kind of how long can you wait, you know?
Yeah, and I think being the backup point or the third string point guard might be his way to see the floor with the number of, with, you know, Culver, Okogie, Edwards, and Beasley. Like, that might be Noel's way to see the floor. Thing with Noel was he came up and played some games last season, and I mean, just like basically scrub minutes, but he just never looked good at the NBA level. But he was dominant in the G League when he was playing for the Iowa Wolves, and I think he kind of got this reputation where he was just like a catch-and-shoot guy. That's what people thought he was. And one of the Timberwolves reporters asked him about that after his first preseason game this year. And he just basically said, like, I don't know where that came from. I've always been a guy, like a ball handler, a secondary ball handler. And he's not a catch-and-shoot guy. Like, he likes to attack the rim. And he's somebody that interests me, and I hope it works out for him, because he was the Pac-12 Player of the Year a couple years ago. And hopefully he can, you know, get some minutes if he needs, especially if the Timberwolves need him, and he can play well in that role. But looking at the Mavericks, I know this guy hasn't played much, but he was somebody that I liked, and I hope the Timberwolves picked up with their second round pick before the draft happens and all the trades and everything. But Tyler Bay, have you seen much out of Bay? Because he was somebody that I liked before the draft, and
yeah, I was a big fan as well. I mean, the defense was just insane. Hasn't really played much. He's kind of been, like, he plays the last 5 minutes. He plays the pure garbage time. So it's really hard to say. It seems like they're not going to be playing him much, at least right away. But kind of seeing, I feel like his game could be similar to, like, Al-Farouq Aminu when it's at his best. And the Mavs had their run with Al-Farouq Aminu. It took him a while to get acclimated into the system, but when he got there, like, Carlisle knew how to use him so well. And like you said, with the two-way, I guess just lack of limitations, it's real easy to draw up a scenario where he gets rotation minutes when they need just extra defenders, which right. obviously, like, was the biggest push this year was defense, defense, defense. I really do think that they have confidence in him to be able to step in as a specialist when needed. Honestly, against Minnesota would be a good matchup. Like, when you get, like I said, with Dorian Finney-Smith, like, in the regular season last year, I remember them having, they would guard him, or he would guard Cat, you know, 5 to 15 feet out and everything. You could do the same for Tyler Bay. So, like, I don't see why they wouldn't put him in if he's available. So, I love the upside, but he hasn't shown anything yet.
Yeah. What's your expectation for Thursday night's game? Do you see the Mavericks running it like a regular season game with that type of rotation, or do you think they're trying to see more run with more of the younger guys who just see maybe they have some roster decisions to make or something? What do you expect to see out of Rick Carlisle's squad?
Yeah, so they should be good on the roster because they cut JJ Barea. But I think that you're going to see them play for a legit three quarters is what I would guess. I don't think they're going to go the opposite way and just rest. But I think you're going to see for three quarters they play like real rotations and everything. And then fourth quarter, they'll start changing it up, experimenting with like the 11th, 12th, 13th, and so on guys. That's kind of my expectation. It's just that they'll treat it close to a real game.
Yeah. And for the Wolves, I kind of expect that too, but the sticky situation is, obviously D'Angelo Russell's out, but you're dealing with the same thing where your second best player is out as well with Kristaps Porzingis going through, what was it, knee surgery or?
Yeah, something like that.
But other than that, I'm just interested to see if they do run it more like a real game, who plays next to Karl-Anthony Towns? Because there's a ton of options on the Wolves that are all like not that good, but they're like the best options we have. It's down to like Jake Layman, who's looked really good next to Towns on both sides of the floor for the most part, but he's not a great defender, but he has looked pretty solid. Then you have someone like Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, who is just a dog defensively. He's super versatile, and he would help out Cat a lot, but he doesn't fit the system because he can't knock down a three. He's just career like 20% three-point shooter. Then you have like Juancho Hernangómez, who's a good offensive player but doesn't provide much on the defense side of the floor, and he just looked really bad in the first preseason game, which again, it's preseason. Yeah. He joined the team even late because he was filming a movie somewhere overseas with Adam Sandler.
What?
Yeah, Juancho Hernangómez is a movie star. But he was filming a movie with Adam Sandler, and then there was, I think, troubles with like his visas coming back to the United States with all the COVID restrictions and stuff. So he came in late, but he didn't look good. But I have faith he'll look a lot better than he did that game. But it's just like those are three of your options at power forward. Then you have guys like Jaden McDaniels, who's a rookie, who I don't think has any shot to really get rotational minutes this year. But if there's issues, he might have to. And then like Jared Vanderbilt and possibly Ed Davis, but I think Davis will be a center in this system. But there's just a lot of question marks there, and I'm interested to see what that looks like on Thursday and then kind of compare that to the Timberwolves season opener, which is next Wednesday against Detroit, and just see what the rotation looks like. Because I wrote a rotational piece, like what I expected, and there was like 12 guys that I was like, I expect this person to play. And now I'm like looking back and I'm like, I don't know. I don't think Saunders is running a 12-man rotation. So who doesn't get minutes on a nightly basis? And I just can't figure it out. But I want to talk about just your expectations for the Maverick. By the way, you're the first person on the podcast to talk about real basketball that wasn't a Timberwolves guy. So congrats for that. But
thank you. Thank you.
But I want to see what are your expectations as a Mavericks fan and somebody who obviously is not just like a fan, but you kind of actually, I don't know, there's like casual fans and then people that are much more invested, and you're obviously the latter there. What are your expectations for the Mavericks this season?
It really varies on how long Porzingis is out. I think that's going to be what kind of changes how and where I expect them to finish, but they need a hot start. Like that's also going to be huge. The realistic expectation, if everything goes right, probably a 3 or 4 seed. That seems pretty high though. I don't feel like they can be better than I don't think that one of these three teams, which are the two LA teams in Denver, I don't think there's really a way that they're worse than Dallas unless they get really screwed by injuries. So probably 4 seed is the realistic ceiling. And then 7 seed, I don't really see them being below that. But who knows, because the West is a bloodbath. But I do think they're, like, on paper, a lock for the playoffs. I think this is Rick Carlisle's best team that he's had since 2011. I said that also in 2011-2012 when I thought OJ Mayo, Chris Kamen, and, like, all these other guys were good pickups. But this one, I, like, actually firmly believe this is his best roster that he's had since the title team. So I really do think a 50 – whatever the adjusted
pace
would be. I guess 45. 45 is whatever. Like the new 50.
Right.
Yeah. So, like, I could easily see that being achieved.
Yeah. So, I'm pretty high on the Mavericks. I think they had a hell of an offseason. I think, you know, losing Seth Curry hurts, but you replace him with someone who fills more of a need for your team with Josh Richardson. You brought in some tough defensive players like Richardson and then also like James Johnson. You got some rookies who can help you, especially Josh Green. And I actually have them as a fourth seed in my predicted Western Conference. I have Lakers, Clippers, Blazers, and then Mavericks at four. And you mentioned the Nuggets. I actually have the Nuggets down at six. I didn't love their offseason. Wow. I think losing Jeremy Grant and Mason Plumlee is going to hurt them a lot more than people think it will. And I think they're betting a bit too much on Michael Porter Jr. being really good. And I think he will be really good, but I think they're betting a bit too much on him right now. And maybe they'll prove me wrong. But I have them down at six. But I have the Mavericks at four, so I'm pretty high on the Mavericks. Obviously, it will come down to how long Porzingis is out. If he's out for a couple months, I don't know if there's a timetable at all for his return. If he's out an extended period of time, I think that they maybe do end up as like the sixth or seventh seed, but come playoff time, they could easily upset a two or three seed in the playoffs and make it to the second round and then have to play somebody beyond that. I think at full strength, they're one of the best teams in the Western Conference.
Yeah, and so the timeline for Porzingis is anywhere from I've seen reports saying that he thinks that he could be back by opening day or Christmas. Sorry, Christmas, not opening day. Which is, I'm not even sure how I'd feel about that. It feels rushed. Right. I've also seen, you know, potentially MLK Day. So it's pretty wide. I like what you said, though, about Seth. Like, losing Seth hurt, but, and maybe this is too simplistic, when you look at, he went missing a lot, especially in the bubble. He just wasn't the same Seth Curry that he was before the shutdown, which is, like, kind of an unfair thing because the shutdown did a lot of guys no favors.
Right.
But he just, when he wasn't hitting, there were times where you're like, wait, he's been on the court for 25 minutes and he's done nothing. And I don't think you'll have that same low of Josh Richardson, where even when Josh Richardson isn't scoring or his offense is just off entirely, he's still going to add so much more defensively than Seth Curry did that it's gonna severely outweigh it. I think it was a positive move, and they got a pick for him, which still is mind-boggling to me. Yeah. Even if the guy isn't gonna play immediately,
who did they draft with the pick?
That was Tyler Bay.
Okay, Bay. And that's a good project guy to get with, especially when you, I would say, but I mean for Philly it makes sense to swap the players. I don't know if the pick makes sense, but I think Curry fits them better, and I think Richardson fits the Mavs better. But you mentioned the bubble. And I think that's going to be a benefit for a lot of teams, especially teams that were out early in the playoffs. How did the Mavericks end up? Lose second round?
They lost in six to the Clippers in the first.
Oh, yeah, first round. Okay, so the Mavericks had that time to play. They brought back a very similar roster this season going into the year, and they didn't have a super extended time off from their last game, where you have teams like the Timberwolves, the Warriors, the Hawks, all three of those teams are in really similar situations, and I think it's going to take them a long time to adjust. One, they haven't played since March. Secondly, their rosters look totally different. When you think of the Hawks, they brought in Bogdanovich, and they brought in Gallinari, and they brought in Okongwu, and Clint Capella's never played for them before. Those are four of your rotational pieces who have just never played together or played with your star player in Trae Young. And it's just going to be interesting to see how that works out. Then you look at the Warriors. Steph hasn't really played in a long time. Oubre's brand new. Wiggins hasn't played in 9 months, and he was new to that system. And then you have Wiseman, who's probably going to be your starting center, who's a rookie. And then you look at the Timberwolves, and D'Lo and Kat played one game together. Malik Beasley and Juancho Hernangómez played two games with Kat. Rubio hasn't played with Kat since 2016 or 17. And then Edwards is brand new. Layman's barely played, and because he was hurt most of last year. Kat's barely played in like over a year. He's only played a few games. It's just all over the board. And those teams are going to take longer to adjust and get back, knock the rust off. Where teams that were in the bubble, I think, have a little bit of an advantage. Maybe Miami and LA have a little disadvantage compared to some of the other bubble teams because it hasn't been long enough for them. But those teams like the Mavericks, who were out in the first round, they've had like a normal length off season.
Yep.
I mean, Grant, they had the break from March until the season started back up, but from the time the playoffs ended for them till now, it's probably relatively close to a normal off season. But I just went through the Timberwolves' whole spiel about why they're gonna probably be slow to start the year. As an outside person who is obviously not like a primary Timberwolves fan, what does the Timberwolves look like to you as a franchise, as a team for this season? What do you see from them?
Yeah, so I mean, I think they're not a playoff team, unfortunately. I think Kat plays out of his mind. I think ultimately, though, the guard play is going to be what makes or break the season. If Culver takes a step forward, if Edwards can prove he can be, you know, live up to number one pick status, I still think even in an A-plus season, they're like probably the 10-9 seed just because of how much of a bloodbath it is. And I really don't trust the depth a lot as much as it pains me. But I do think they're going to be one of the more fun teams. And I don't think that just because they're going to be losing a lot doesn't mean that they're going to be bad. They're going to hang in there with a lot of teams. I don't think they're going to be like most teams in the NBA now this year. Like, there's no easy game against them. They're not, right. You know, there's no like major flaw. I don't think that you're like, all right, just attack them here and we win. I mean, if everybody's healthy, I think there's a legit chance though that they could, if everything goes right, like maybe they could sneak into the play-in game, but I feel like that's very optimistic. I mean, just fighting for that playoff spot, though, I feel like it's all you can ask for, right? Like, that's like a big hope.
Yep, and I'm kind of in the same boat. I don't necessarily think... I think if everything fell right, they could maybe get into, like, the eighth seed or be in the play-in games. I am currently projected to be the 11th seed. I don't think they're going to be... I've seen some as, like, 14th or 13th. I don't think they're going to be that bad. I think the offense is going to be too good.
Yep.
If you had to guess, like... top 5, top 10, top 15. What do you think like the Wolves offense would be this coming year?
Top 15. I fully believe in it. I think the offense, especially with Kat and D'Lo, I mean, that it opens everybody else up. And especially when you consider how much, like, yeah, they get their easy 20 points a game, but then you consider how much they make their teammates better too. Like, I just feel like everything's going to be on a platter for everybody else, you know?
Right, for sure. And I'm in the same boat there, actually. I feel pretty safe that they're going to be a top 10 offense in the league. Maybe the first month or so is going to be kind of rough just because everybody's going to know each other. But by the end of the season, they're going to be like a top 10 offense. Optimistically, I think they could be like top 5 or 6 offense in the league if everything hits right. If Malik Beasley truly is close to a 20-point per game scorer, if Kat does continue to get better because he has every year and he was already at 26 points per game last year, it could potentially happen. But I saw a stat last season. So at the end of last season, the Timberwolves ended up 24th in offense, 21st in defense. And obviously Karl-Anthony Towns only played about half of their games. With Kat on the floor, the Wolves were the second best offense in the league. But they were... And that was before... And that was, you know, without like Beasley and Watt. That was like Kat, Wiggins, Jeff Teague teams. With Kat off the floor. So they were second best on, when he was on, they were second best offense, last in defense, like dead 30th. When he was off the floor, they were 30th in offense, dead last in the league. And then they were 15th in defense.
See, I feel like Kat is a team, like, whatever you put around him, that's what his defense is going to be. Like, if you put bad defenders next to him, and obviously, like, Culver and Okogie are good defenders, but they can only do so much. Like, correct me if I'm wrong, but it's always kind of been about who you put next to him. No? Like,
yeah, my thing with Kat is, like, put somebody next to Kat that doesn't make mistakes of their own, so Kat doesn't have to make mistakes covering up that person's mistakes. If Kat, for the most part, only has to worry about his guy, he's actually a good rim protector. It's when Ja Morant blows past D'Angelo Russell and then Kat has to decide, is he going to stop Ja or is he going to try and just stay on Valanciunas and hope somebody else helps with Ja? So that's kind of the big thing. But so I'm not going to say he's a great, but he's actually a solid rim protector, and it's more about who you put next to him and the scheme that you run with him than it is about him. And hopefully they figure that out. Who would be your X factor for the Mavericks? Like, the guy that could make or break the team? And not like Luka Doncic, but because obviously if he's gone, if he's out, they're gonna suffer. But who would be your X factor for the team?
Man, I got a tie, a three-way tie, because, or really two-way, because Porzingis is a cheat code answer too. I'm not gonna say him,
right?
Because his health is just a given at this point.
Yeah.
Josh Richardson being as good as advertised is definitely one. And then I would say Dwight Powell, if he can stay healthy and look the same, like look like he didn't just come off an Achilles tear.
Right.
I mean, the Mavs offense looked a lot different. Like Mavs fans had a civil war over the guy, which was an experience of itself. Yeah. And, I did not agree with half of the people. I think it was very obvious how much better he made the offense. Like if you have to stop either Luka Doncic or one of the best role men, it's not an easy choice.
Right.
Like, he's going to make you pay regardless. And then it kind of, that role gravity, like, it's real. I think those are the two things that are going to be the most important.
I would have probably pegged Richardson there. I didn't really think of Powell, but that when you bring it up, that's a really good point. And obviously Porzingis with this health and everything. For the Wolves, and I told you not to pick Luka, but, like, I think Kat really could be an X factor for this team. How bought in he is defensively. But then outside of Kat, obviously Anthony Edwards is like our big X factor. Is he the number one pick? Is he a top guy out of this year's draft? And how good is he going to be this season on both sides of the floor? And then my underrated one would be Ricky Rubio. Just how much does Ricky Rubio help Anthony Edwards and Culver and D'Angelo Russell? Because Ricky Rubio played alongside Donovan Mitchell, who is some people's comp for Anthony Edwards. And he really made Donovan Mitchell really good. And I think that Rubio helped in Mitchell's development more than people kind of give it credit for. And we kind of saw the same thing with Devin Booker last year, with Rubio playing alongside him. And obviously now Devin Booker has, you know, a little bit better of a, or a lot better of a Ricky Rubio in Chris Paul. But like, can Rubio do the same thing with Beasley, Russell, or Edwards, or two of the three that he did with, like, Mitchell and Booker? And I'm not going to chalk up their entire development to Ricky Rubio, because obviously that's not fair. But he definitely played a role there, and I'm interested to see how that translates with other guards on the Timberwolves. So he's kind of my X-factor guy. And Timberwolves fans, obviously, they love Ricky Rubio. He's, like, the golden child of the Minnesota Timberwolves. Everybody's favorite Timberwolf, except for Kevin Garnett. But he would be the big one for the Timberwolves, in my opinion.
Yeah, that's actually a good answer. I didn't think of that, because, I mean, even I follow a ton of Suns people, and, I mean, they credit Rubio so much for the growth of that team last year. Like, that's just kind of who he is. He's kind of that mentor kind of point guard at this point in his career.
I think he's a good guy as a mentor, and then just on the floor, too. He's just a solid player.
Yep.
I've heard some people say now the Wolves have the best backup point guard in the league with Rubio, and I haven't seen like every depth chart, but I mean, I'm guessing he's a top 5 to 7 backup point guard in the league. He'd start on a number of teams. I mean, some Timberwolves fans are clamoring for him to be the starting point guard and have D'Lo be the off guard, which is interesting, but I just don't see it happening. But yeah, I've seen a lot of Suns fans say the same thing, that Rubio was really impactful for Devin Booker and just that whole team last year. So I'm interested to see what it looks like for the Timberwolves this season.
Dang, now you got me thinking on the best backup point guard. He might be, if he's not starting, yeah, I think it actually is him.
Yeah,
Tim, or like what, Monty Morris? Like,
yeah, I don't know. I mean, Monty Morris is really good.
Maybe we're missing someone, but
I don't know who. I'm just thinking of, like, teams and, like, I mean, if LeBron starts at point guard and then Schroeder comes off the bench.
No, that's a cheat answer. That is a cheating answer.
Right, exactly.
Dennis Schroeder doesn't count.
Right. And he might even start for them. So,
yeah.
And then I can't think of another. I can't. Unless, like, Lonzo Ball comes off the bench for Bledsoe, maybe, or Bledsoe comes off for Lonzo, one of the two. That would be pretty comparable, I would say. But for the most part, you know, Rubio's probably a top 3 to 5 backup point guard in the league. And he'll play pretty much starter minutes, and I'm sure he'll be on the closing lineup for the team. So, backup point guard, sure, but definitely not only a 20-minute per night guy. But that's pretty much all I had, unless you have anything else you want to talk about for the matchup Thursday. Hopefully you can find a way to watch it, because hopefully
I'll Fox, figure it out.
Fox Sports figures everything out. But yeah, now we're in the same situation up here, so a lot of people are kind of the same way. Who do the Mavericks open the season against, and what day is that?
Phoenix on the 22nd, I believe.
22nd, so they're on opening night against Phoenix. Yep. So that'll be...
I think so. Don't quote. Now I got to double check. I'm doubting myself. But I'm pretty sure. They get that and the Christmas game.
I think you're right.
No, so not opening night. They're not opening
23rd,
night.
Okay.
Wednesday.
So that would be the same night the
But
Wolves
they're on
play.
ESPN.
Yep. And then they play the Lakers. So they have a tough... We talked about this before, I think. Was it before we started recording? But that the Wolves just have a tough go to start the season. But the Mavericks, I mean, they got to play Chris Paul's Suns, and then the Lakers and Clippers. Then they have the Hornets, but then they have the Mavericks.
It eases up, yeah.
But the West is just going to be a bloodbath. I mean, I don't see a Western Conference team that I'm, like, sold on is just going to be, like, bad. Like, I don't think the Kings are going to be very good. And, yeah, okay, the Thunder. But they could surprisingly be okay, too. Because, like, Al Horford could be okay for them, and then Shea could be good. And you could see growth from some people. But yeah, the Thunder are probably going to be bad. But other than that, like, I think the Kings won't be good. But I'm not throwing down $100 that the Kings are going to be the 14th seed. Nope. Like, they could be the 10th seed. Like, there's just so many teams. I mean, I think Luke Walton sucks as a coach, and they need to find someone else. But they have talent, too. So the West is just going to be a bloodbath. It'll be interesting. It'll be interesting to see if, like, something happens with Harden and Houston and everything else there. But other than that, I mean, it's going to be tough for every team to try and get in. If you have a star player go down for a month or something, that could be your window to see. And that's like a way I could see the Wolves somehow sneaking the playoffs, because there's injuries every year. And if the Wolves are healthy, and I mean, I don't want other teams to get injured by any means, but if they did, the Wolves would need to take advantage of a situation like that.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, that's what I was going to say, was it's the 14 to like 10 is going to be who got unlucky with injuries. I think I really am sold on Oklahoma City being the worst team in the West, just because they're not going to be able to beat so many teams in the West.
Uh-huh.
It's not even that they're horrible. It's just like, they're one of the best bad teams we've seen in a while.
Yeah.
But like, I don't know. I really do think that it's going to come down to almost luck. I mean, whether or not it's injuries, like you said, or COVID, I mean, like one of those two things is going to shape the conferences.
For sure. Well, if you don't have anything else, I don't have anything else. So thank you for coming on. I really do appreciate that. And yeah, if you want to plug anything, you working on anything fun or anything like that?
Nothing too crazy yet. Waiting for draft time to heat up as conference play comes up. But
see some Jalen Suggs in action and just have a good time.
Need Gonzaga back. I need Gonzaga back.
Yeah, they haven't played in a while, so I'm... Suggs, obviously, is from Minnesota. He's super good. For now, he's like my second guy behind Cunningham. So, but I have to watch. I have to watch a lot more. And we haven't seen Green play, Kuminga play. So, but yeah. Well, anyways, thank you, Richard, for coming on. Make sure everybody listening, go ahead, follow him at MavsDraft on Twitter. That's MavsDraft. Give him a follow. One of the best draft guys every year. Even if you don't like the Mavs, follow him in the summer for draft stuff, whatever. But yeah, thanks for coming on, man. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, but thanks everybody for listening. I'll be back next time.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.